Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda.
And this is Sam.
And we're going to talk today about another original episode about what are we doing here online?
I know we've never taken this route before. So we're really going to explore it. But this got brought up because we were both kind of figuring out what we felt inspired to talk about today. And I brought up my current relationship with content creation. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'll start. I'll repeat basically what I said, and I'll clue you all in on the conversation, and then we can circle back. I am feeling like I am in saying it offline with Amanda, I use the word flop, and I think that might be a little strong. I am feeling like I am in a content creation slump right now, not only because all creators have experienced a pretty significant drop in reach in the last couple of months since the last big algorithm update that they did. But I am feeling, if I am totally vulnerable with it, I am feeling very overwhelmed at the demand that is being placed on content creators from consumers of it has to be edited and it has to be catchy and it has to be short and you have to teach me everything in 7 seconds and you have to do video and you have to have perfect graphically designed carousels and you have to be on every single trend. And if you haven't been doing trends, you have to do trends. And if you're yapping, you have to be a better yapper and you have to have the right microphone because people like the microphones and you have to be doing different angles and you have to be doing a faster pace and it has to be this. And you know what? Like if your content's bad, it's because of you. It's not because of the demand. It's just because you're a bad creator and you're boring and you haven't kept up with it.
I agree. I mean, I feel like I can, hopefully this isn't boring to you guys listening, but like, no. I feel like one of the most fascinating things is, right, like I got onto Instagram in like 2019, where it was still of the age where like, if you just learn how to make graphics, I remember I like spent a lot of money to like buy this set of graphics from Morgan Harper Nichols, actually. And I like, she licensed them to this like app and I bought those and I made them look really pretty. And, you know, all you needed to do was learn how to, right? Instagram started, you had to be a good photographer. Then you had to learn how to be an amateur graphic designer. Then you had to learn how to like be a performer and do dances and do trends and be funny. And then you had to learn how to basically, you know, be a public speaker, be a professional videographer, be a video editor, be a podcaster. I don't even, now you have to do everything all at once. Yeah. It is just wild to watch how the expectations just rise. And there's a famous quote, I know that you have heard of him probably, Sam. Let me not butcher this. Okay, an economist, John Maynard Keynes.
John Maynard Keynes.
Yeah, there you go. I'm sharing this and Sam corrects the name. Right. There's a quote from him basically where he, in 1930, he was an economist and he predicted that because of technology, we were going to be so productive by 2030, we'd be down to working 15 hours a week, which obviously we are close to 2030 and that has not happened. And instead, everything with technology is just like the bar is raised. And I think especially with AI, right? The bar is just like now people claim they're running companies with like two people because of AI. It's just exhausting.
And on TikTok,
yeah,
since they've been bought by Larry Ellison's family.
Yeah. Yeah. What is the current state of TikTok? I have not been on.
So I can't speak to anybody else. I will sometimes go to other creators that have comparable followings to mine. So I have 250,000 followers on TikTok. And I will go to other creators that are comparable in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I will look to see like the reach that they are getting. Because I'm a big video for me now is 10,000 views.
Yeah, which is crazy.
And at my peak, that used to be a low video for me. There was a time where I was averaging anywhere from like 50 to 100,000 views per video.
Yep.
And now the last couple of months, on every single one of my videos, I will go 2 hours and I will maybe have 600 views on a video. Mm-hmm. And then at the bottom of every single video, in fact, I'll read it to you right now what it says. It says, turn your video into a view magnet. Spend $25, get 10,000 views. Mm-hmm. It says that at the bottom of every single one. Want to reach a larger audience? Turn your video into a lead magnet. Spend $25, get 11,000 views.
Well, it's like what we were talking about in like the clipping economy episode. Mm-hmm. We did. It is really pay to play. Even mm-hmm. what looks like organic reach is not mm-mm. anymore. Mm-mm.
And the reason like we're bringing this up, because I'm sure you're listening to this and you're like, I do not care about content creators moaning about what they're doing. I think it's a larger shift of we're consuming faster and more. And it's mm-hmm. we're coming up on a sustainability issue.
Yes.
Like there's only, because I think everybody is under this illusion that we've made our lives so efficient, which then makes your life easier. But all that happens is when you condense everything into smaller chunks, you allow room for more chunks in there. Mm-hmm. And so I personally don't know how the internet can keep up with this hockey stick of demand and content. And I just don't know. Mm-hmm. It feels like too much. Mm-hmm. And I think even for me, like when I put on my consumer hat role as opposed to creator, I feel like as a consumer, I'm like, it all feels the same. Everybody's videos look the same. Mm-hmm. Everybody's using the same type of editing style, the same type of hooks, it's the same trend over and over and over. Like right now as we're recording, the whole like Netflix documentary thing is taking off. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like it gets to a point where it's not interesting anymore.
I agree.
It's not interesting. No,
lately
to me.
When I've been online, I'm like, this is not interesting.
No. Anybody who has original thoughts, I don't hear from them.
Yeah.
They're very hard to find. And you have to be like very intentional about once you do find somebody mm-hmm. to follow them.
Well, I think what's also really bad is everything is a take of a take of a take of a take. Mm-hmm. And it is just like the snake is eating themselves at some point. And then you factor in the clipping economy on top of that. And it's like, do people really feel this way? Or are people so incentivized to have a take about everything, specifically things that you know like are trendy or will get people to react? Like I'm thinking mm-hmm. about like Taylor Swift and her wedding. Do people actually feel this way? Are these takes really that takes people truly have? Do they care this much? Or is it now becoming content and people see that people are mad about this and that's trending? So then they start jumping on and they're like, oh, well, what about this point? What about that point? And they start making those points too. And it's just like, if we all didn't have a microphone, would we be saying these things? Would we really care this much? While also like not caring about things we probably should care about.
Right.
Like you only have so much care and we're all like.
Well, I don't think this, because there's a lot we could say about the Taylor Swift wedding in many directions. And maybe we'll get into that in a minute. But in keeping up with like this idea of like polarizing issues, the big thing going around TikTok right now for the last like week or so is, have you heard of Voice Memo Guy?
No.
Have you heard of this? Well, you haven't been on your phone.
Yeah. Literally, guys, I accidentally left my phone at the place I was like doing a writing retreat for. So jeez. I've been without my phone. I did connect my my messages to my computer because I was at my parents' house and mm-hmm. to be able to contact them. I literally got to the airport and I was like, I don't have my phone. What am I going to do? I don't have my phone and I don't have any way to contact anyone to tell them that I left my phone or come pick me up. I can't contact an Uber. So I'm just getting on the plane. I got a paper ticket. And yeah, so I've been without a phone for like 4 days now, which is Which is a really interesting experience because I've been like fairly checked out of social media because I've been bricking my phone a lot. But normally when I brick my phone a lot, I spend an exorbitant amount of time scrolling on Pinterest or playing words with friends or doing crosswords because clearly I'm addicted. So it's been a very fascinating, like it's been really interesting the past couple of days actually to not have a phone. Like if I want to text someone, I have to go up to my office and type at my computer. I can't call anyone. I can do a – and also some people I don't have – I haven't connected my phone to my computer since 2021. Jesus. So any new contact I have, if they don't text me first
– they're not there.
Yeah, so I can't text you unless you text me first because my you're not in my – I didn't know you in 2021.
Oh, my God, you're right.
So it's very silly of just like how disconnected I am and, yeah, I like can't call to make an appointment for things if I need to really without using my husband's
phone. Oh, she's
phone.
Like off grid.
Yeah, so it's been really fascinating though because – like I can focus watching TV. I've been a lot more present with my daughter. I'm not saying I'm going to keep doing this because I won't be able to. But I've never had this experience.
Yeah. Before. I feel like, well, now you have to be like almost bullied into it. I feel like most people wouldn't be able to do it just with their phone there.
Yeah. No, no, no. I don't think so. Although I was like, oh, because even like, I mean, I set my alarm every morning as though my daughter's not going to wake me up at 7 a.m. every single day. So I've just like, I haven't been setting an alarm because I don't have a phone. And I just, I've read almost a whole book since then. So yeah, there's a big part of me that doesn't want to go back, but obviously I'm going to. And,
right.
You know, we'll see if I can take any of this into my life once I get my phone back. Probably not. But it does make me be like, you know, I've been able to watch TV without scrolling on my phone. So, you know, I pay much better attention.
Well, I'm envious because I almost feel like I need to go dark for like a week. I feel like I need to like completely reset myself with it. Like I realized today, like there was a couple times I went to film and I just wanted to be like, fuck this. Like, but regardless, the reason I brought up voice memo guy. So the story is, the girl might have posted it like a week and a half ago, maybe. So it's a voice memo following a first or second date, I think. Yep. Or maybe even they knew each other a little bit more. And this guy in a voice memo basically says, look, like, I want to have sex. I want to have sex. If you don't want to have sex, that's great.
He sends this voice memo to someone that's his date.
Yes, someone that he's been seeing and getting to know.
Okay.
And he basically says, I want a sexual relationship. If you don't want that, that's great. But this is not going to work. Like, because he was supposed to be going to her house. Okay. The next time they were going to meet up, he was going to go to her house. And he said, look, when I come over, I would really like to have sex. If you don't want that, this is not going to work. I'm in for a sexual relationship. First of all, she puts this on the internet, which I think there's a debate there. I think there is a debate to be had about the privacy of voice memos.
Mm-hmm.
And it has now opened this whole massive debate of half of the internet saying that this man was simply laying out his expectation. Mm. And he left room for her to say she doesn't want this and she'll move on. And then the other half of the internet saying that part of the internet is insane and that we truly don't understand consent and that that wasn't consent. Mm. It was that he was bullying her into it and trying to tell her that she had to do something and that he was going to withhold this, that, and the other if she didn't do it. And mm-hmm. then the consent people coming back and saying, then how the hell else is he supposed to elaborate on what he expects in a relationship? Mm-hmm. And then the other half being like, but that's the whole problem, is men are expecting this, that, and the other, and they feel entitled, blah, blah, blah. So that has opened this whole... I've been seeing like the think piece of a think piece of a think piece of a think piece of a think piece.
Yes, yes, yes.
And there's one creator in particular that is getting like absolutely eviscerated for basically saying, like, we've lost the plot on what consent is. And this guy was literally just saying to her, like, here's what I expect.
Yeah.
Take it or leave it. Right. Yeah. And it, like, people have just been ripping her to shreds and saying, like, I can't believe you. Like, you're condoning, like, you know, rapist type behavior and blah, 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 blah. And then the people that are defending her have also been like, yeah, was it weird? Sure. Was it poorly delivered? Fine. But, like, he literally laid out exactly what he expected and said, if you're not into that, this isn't going to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, where is the line? And I do think this is the problem of, like, at the end of the day, none of this impacts us.
Yes.
This is between two people.
Mm-hmm.
Why do, like, it kind of doesn't matter because it's how she feels about it.
Yeah.
If she feels uncomfortable, then it was uncomfortable. If she feels that he was clear and she just thought it was an interesting text, great.
Yep. Well, I think we take these, like, micro individual moments and make them referendums.
Yes. On everybody.
On everyone and our culture. And I'm not saying there isn't a time and a place for it. And I think that's what's hard. Like, I think about this all the time of, like, are we reacting? And are we negatively, like, contributing to this? And I think it's just fascinating because the solution can't be, like, no one should talk. We shouldn't have these, like, discussions. Right. But I think we've lost the plot when you are like monetarily incentivizing people to be more extreme and you're monetarily incentivizing them to talk about something that is already trendy. It's like it is going to cause this, I don't know, this, like, disproportionate reaction, this unhealthy, like, media environment, whatever we want to say.
Yeah. What's hard is I'm just kind of like, guys, like, honestly, like, both are right.
Yeah.
Like, both are right. Technically, this guy was just very blunt and direct on what he expected from anybody that he tries to date and get to know. Is there a world where we can debate the aggressiveness of it? Sure. Amazing. Let's talk about it. But, like, you're allowed to look at that type of behavior and simply say, that is not behavior I would engage with someone I'm dating.
Yeah.
I would hear that voice memo and decide that's not somebody I want to be with.
I think some of the nuance is that obviously it is, like, really, like, shitty in our culture that men are so incentivized to have sex that this situation happens. Like, yes, this is preferable than doing it in the moment or things like that. It is sad to me that he is not interested in having any patience for it developing or anything like that. But this does happen often on online dating websites anyway, where people are, like, clear that they want a sexual relationship, they want a one night stand, whatever. So I guess I think it's interesting that people are so shocked by this.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of less shocking than, or less bad than just, like, you know, messaging someone on Tinder and being like, wanna hook up.
Let's see if I can find the, because then you can hear it.
I feel like I'm going to hear this guy's tone and I'm going to be like, call it off everything I said. This guy's terrible.
All right, I figured I'd send you a voice note because it's, like, easier than, like, texting all this. But anyway, had a good time tonight. Definitely think you are lovely. However, I would love to, if we're going to go to your place on Thursday, I mean, I am looking to have that physical intimacy to see if, like, I am sexually compatible with you. So, like, if I'm going to come over, like, I would be hoping to, like, hook up, have sex, have a good time, have, like, that romantic spark and that physical spark there for my own sake, because it's hard for me to continue dating someone and seeing them if I don't know if I'm sexually compatible. So I know you said I don't know about that. So, like, I guess my thing is like, what would be the point of me coming over then if we're not gonna, like, hook up and, like, cuddle and, like, be intimate with each other? And if that's what you don't want, that's fine. But, like, I think we should just, like, end it here then, respectfully, just because I... First date, that's fine. Like, you want to get to know each other, I'm all about that. But, like, I am looking to have that physical aspect there. And I don't want to continue seeing someone if I don't know if that's good, if that's not there or not. So, up to you. Let me know. I'm happy to, if you do want me to come over, I'm happy to do so. Would love to fuck, have a good time. And, you know, we can have some wine, hang out.
And that's the end of it. So
what, he was doing well until the end.
I
not well, but you know, I don't know. Someone's gonna come after us and be like, "You're condoning this."
I don't. But what are if what's being condoned?
Yeah,
like there's a part of me that's like, you don't have to like it.
Yeah, I agree.
I would rather him be doing it this way than go to her house and have this conversation at her house. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not trying to like say like, oh, the bar is literally in hell. Like, just like lay on top of it and you'll be fine. No, but like, he's literally telling you exactly how he is going to go about dating.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, you can say to this guy, that's not going to fly for me.
Yep.
And if it makes you that uncomfortable right out of the gate, this probably isn't a person you want to build a long-term relationship with anyway.
Totally.
So I struggle with this very intense, like, this is indicative of a larger problem. I'm like, this is not new.
I agree. And I also think, like, I'm thinking about, you know, someone had said to us, because we did write when we had Dr. Audra
Horny
on. It's really funny that her last name is Horny. She's a men's therapist. I'm sorry. I'm 10.
It's too much. I know. I love her. She's the best, but it's too much. You have to giggle at it.
Right. When we had her on, someone said, they said that, like, they know that we did the episode with Dr. Audra, kind of like advocating for like men's health. And, you know, she kind of talked about men's mental health and what happens. And it made me think about, you know, maybe this is also a guy who's like trying to kind of be honest, like sloppily.
Yeah.
And we don't like it. But again, I think that, and you can say, like, I wish men didn't overly focus on sex and things like that. But I feel like it was an attempt, and it doesn't seem like it was done in bad faith necessarily, because it doesn't seem like there was pressure. He didn't send her like a dick pic, you know, he didn't, you know, any of that. But yeah, it just, yeah. So it, like, to me especially, remember when Jonah Hill, those text messages with him came out? Mm-hmm. Like, to me, there's a very big difference between him. Mm-hmm. And for those of you that don't remember or didn't hear about it, it was like a couple years ago, and he basically was like using therapy speak and weaponizing it against his girlfriend by basically setting a bunch of rules for her and like saying that they were boundaries. And it was and so inappropriate and ridiculous. It was like, no. You're not allowed to hang out with men. If you hang out with men, I leave the relationship. Like, you're not allowed to wear bathing suits, you know? And she's like a professional surfer. Like, if you wear bathing suits, I don't think are good, I leave the relationship. And it was like, no, you're trying to punish her. You're trying to control her. A lot of the boundaries were about what she could or couldn't do.
Right.
And then they were like basically sort of ultimatums. So, you know, I'm trying to like think about it from – that's to me, because I could see someone being like, well, what about that? That was indicative of our culture. You know, why did you think that? And to me, that was different. It's like the weakest, worst argument I've ever made. But I don't know. Do you want to save me here?
I just, and this is, I am truly not trying to condone like bad behavior or apologize for somebody, because it was clunky as hell. That voicemail was clunky as hell. It was weird. It was intense. It was kind of like, okay, bro, like, you want sex by night one? Great. But also, like, okay, if we're going to get mad at that, then I want everybody to stop participating in hookup culture.
Yeah.
I don't think it is the most absurd thing in the world for somebody to clearly state, like, honestly, sexual connection is really important to me and I'm in this for that. And if you're not interested in exploring that, I know right off the bat you're not for me.
Yeah.
We can sit and say, like, ooh, is there a part of him that's unhealed and he should do some more work about emotional vulnerability leading up to sexual intimacy? Sure. Mm-hmm. There's a conversation for that. But again, this would be a completely different conversation if she had recorded this while the two of them were in person at her house alone.
Yep.
No go if you are sitting there demanding sex from somebody when yep. you are together. Yep. No. Not going to work ever under any circumstance.
Yep.
This, where he's like, hey, had a great date. We had this conversation. I just want to follow up before we get anywhere that this is what I'm looking for and this is what I'm interested in. Yeah. I don't understand why we are going to get so wrapped around the axle with that.
Well, I think also there's even a broader conversation of, like, if we're saying sex work is work and yes. we're saying people deserve to do whatever they want
right.
with their bodies and right. we should legitimize that. Obviously, like, this isn't a situation where someone's paying for sex or anything like that. But if we want people to be able to, like, be honest with themselves, you know, if they're interested in sexuality, be able to not repress it and ask for what they want in a healthy way. I think you have to, like, allow that to be able to exist. But like you said, like, it doesn't mean you like it. It doesn't mean you yeah. say yes.
Right.
But Tinder exists.
Yes.
For that explicit reason. All right. If you're listening to this and feeling like something is landing, like you keep hearing yourself in what Sam and I are talking about, I want you to pay attention to that, because when that happens, it's not a coincidence. And if you've been thinking about therapy, but you've really had not great luck, you want someone who gets it, not just clinically, but personally, I want to share with you about my practice, Therapy for Women Center. All of our therapists have actually been through the things we treat, whether that's trauma, anxiety, eating disorders, parenthood. When you're sitting there and talking about hard things, you know that the person on the other side really gets it. That's really why I started my practice, because I was sick of going to therapists who didn't fully understand the things that they were treating. At this point, we have over 30 therapists, and we actually hand match you to the right one based on what you're going through. And if we don't get the match right, we'll waive your intake fee and help you switch to another therapist in the practice. We really feel like finding the right therapist shouldn't feel like another thing to white knuckle through. When you reach out to us, you can talk to our intake coordinator, you can email us, you can text us. We'd love to hear from you. We serve 42 states online, in person in the Philadelphia area, but right now we have immediate openings in North Carolina, Arizona, Florida, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Ohio. We'd love to support you if you're looking for a new therapist. Reach out to us at therapyforwomencenter.com. Or you can text us at 215-847-6749.
I don't know. I saw that and I feel like that current conversation is this explosion mm-hmm. of, like, exactly where the internet is right now, where it's just this doubling down constantly of, like, who is right and who is wrong. Mm-hmm. And sure, in some situations that does in fact exist.
Yeah.
But then also I look to everybody and I'm like, is this a cultural conversation that needs to be had right now though?
Yeah. Don't we have bigger things going,
like,
on?
Don't we have bigger things that we could be talking about than a dude sending, like, a mediocre voice note saying he wants to fuck? Like, I just,
yeah,
I don't know. I find it silly. And yeah. I think maybe that's what I'm struggling with, is it feels like so many of the conversations that get highlighted on the internet are just so useless and silly. Mm-hmm. And I think as a content creator, I wrestle with, like, am I just contributing to the noise? Mm-hmm. Am I just contributing to the noise? And it's hard to know the line. And especially when it feels like us content creators, and I know there are many because I follow them and they follow me, and people that I'm mm-hmm. friends with, like, people that are trying to highlight nuance and expertise and legitimate discussion.
Yep.
We don't go anywhere.
Yep.
because, you know, the Stephen Bartletts and the Mel Robbins and, you know, all the other coaches, they can say whatever they want, however they want it. Mm-hmm. And those of us who are professionals and we have training, there's an ethics that we're trained under. Mm-hmm. And it makes it like really hard to engage in the content ecosystem as it is right now. Mm-hmm. And to not feel like you're being punished for mm-hmm. being that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know like where the internet kind of goes. I was listening to a very fascinating person. Oh, I think I like reached out and asked her if she would be on our podcast, and she's way too big for us and obviously didn't respond. Let me look up her name. Cinead Bovell.
Oh, yeah. I follow mm-hmm. her. Yeah.
And she said one thing that was really fascinating because she like studies AI and she talks a lot about AI. And she said especially if you start thinking about the future and you start thinking about the new iPhone update that was like mm-hmm. glass. Yeah. She thinks that update was because they're preparing, like they're, you know, trying to get people used to, even though it was like an objectively worse experience, right? Why does anyone want to be able to see through their phone very well? Right. They're trying to get people used to seeing things over things so that glasses are less shocking. Nothing sounds worse to me than getting glasses, to be honest. But her point then was like, if that's what's coming, we are not going to be scrolling. You know what I mean? Like if people's main way of like interacting with the world is actually like not online, and if people aren't scrolling, then people aren't going to show up and people aren't going to like participate in that way. She thinks like social media will change, or especially with AI, if you can have AI go search the internet for you for something, you're not going to be doing it as much yourself. And her whole point was, you know, what happens to social media, and it's like worse and better.
If there is this transition that we're being forced into that we don't even really know is happening to these glasses, if we're just walking around with glasses on, we're not scrolling, we're not consuming content in the same way. So if we're not going to engage with the content, then how is content served? So is the content creator going to cease to exist mm-hmm. because the content creator will be AI?
Right. And her whole thing, too, is like with AI, if everything is AI slop, right? And everything's made by AI and there are AI creators, which we already know are like happening. It's like, mm-hmm. do you care about an AI person telling you something? I certainly don't. I have no interest in like, unless I'm trying to learn something really specific. Like, I'm not interested. Like, AI influencers are the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I know. Yeah. That it means nothing to me.
I'll put this link in the show notes. But yeah, it was kind of all about how, like, AI just kind of makes things, like, not interesting. Especially because, like, AI, like, and I think Mosseri came out like a couple weeks. I think I sent you that. He like came out a couple weeks ago and was like talking about how AI is basically an existential threat to Instagram. Yeah. But also we can't do anything to stop it. And oh, well.
I guess what I find fascinating right now is this complete capitulation to this threat that is going to impact every single one of us. Mm-hmm. I just find it fascinating that we're all just supposed to be like, ah.
Because of money.
That's it.
Right? Yeah. Like, too bad. Our investors.
Like, the stock. I don't understand. Yeah. Like, what?
Like, this is what she said that is bone-chilling. She wrote in an article, I guess, titled The Post-Reality Era. We are moving toward a world where we each inhabit individual AI-generated realities tuned to our habits, our data, and our existing beliefs. The threat this poses to our collective sense-making cannot be overstated. We're going from the shared self on social media, delusional as it was. At least we had some window into what realities were being served to others, to an environment fabricated entirely by you, by something that knows you better than any of us would like to admit. Sorry if I just... You can always count on me to just steer the podcast
right into the ground.
Right. She's into like, an let's existential.
Let's all lay down and give up. Okay. Did you watch that documentary that this guy did on AI very recently? I can't. Mm-mm. Oh my God. Let me look up the. He got like Sam Altman on there, and the AI doc. Or How I Became an Apocaloptimist.
Oh, okay.
So the guy who made it, his last name's Rohr. He was following along. The story is he was following along with AI.
Yeah.
And kind of really uneasy with it. And then his wife got pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on, he decided, he's like, well, I'm going to go to the source and I'm going to figure out what is going on.
Mm.
So he talked with all of these people that think the world is ending.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went and spoke with all of these people who think this is going to be the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Did he find some nuance in the middle?
And basically what he came to is it's like, well, it's both.
Yeah.
It is really bad and it is really good. Like it is, you know, the things that they're saying it's helped with medicine and technological advancements and solving climate change and, you know, all these different things.
I mean, that's all I want AI to do.
Literally.
Like, my just, God, please
fix
her.
This. We're dying. Yeah. But then, you know, there's all these people that are like, we're all going to starve to death and it's going to collapse the global economy and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, one person was like, I just think it's so selfish that you chose to have a baby now. And the other person's like, I would have 10 babies.
Don't
like, I think
start with me on this. No, I will talk about this all day long.
Same. I just find that so desperately inappropriate to say to somebody. But so I watched the documentary and I think I fall where he ended up falling, which is like, I don't think anything is all good, all bad.
Yeah, I agree.
I think there's a mix to it. I just wish more people had more of a backbone to stand up to some of this.
Mm-hmm.
That like we don't have to scale just to scale.
Yep.
Like that's just not needed. And I feel like everybody right now is just like, we have to grow to grow to grow. And I think I'm even seeing that in the content creator communities across industries and niches. There is this like, we have to evolve. We have to adapt. We have to do more. We have to do less. We have to do faster, better, stronger. And I'm just kind of like, why?
Yeah.
Because a lot of these people doing these same things are the same ones that talk about, ooh, critical thinking is dying.
Yes.
And nuance is dying and nobody's reading anymore. And I'm like, well, okay, it's going to get to a point where like I can't condense a thought into a second and a half.
Yes.
I can't do it. I'm sorry. So like, we all have a say in choosing to engage with long-form content again. We are not being, like, forced into, like, short-form consumption.
Yep.
We still have a say. We can go find, you know, long-form articles. We can read books. We can watch long-form YouTube videos. You can watch longer content. You can challenge yourself to stay for the entirety of a 60-second video to learn
something.
Bring
back friction.
Bring back friction, like bring back learning and being exposed to like, oh, I don't understand this yet. So I'm going to sit with it a little longer. Like we don't have to just capitulate to this. Oh, I guess I have to consume everything in 2 seconds for the rest of forever.
Mm-hmm.
We're very intelligent beings and we can challenge ourselves to say, ooh, my brain has been a little rocked by the technology that I'm exposed to every day. So I'm going to intentionally push myself and challenge myself to not lose those skills. Like, all of you have the right and freedom to do that. We do not just have to bend over simply because someone has told us there is this new thing.
Hear, hear. I completely agree. As you were, before you even said that, what I kept thinking was, like, we do have agency. We have to. It would be much better if we had more informed consent.
Correct.
But one thing that has made me actually really hopeful, Sam, is if I look around at, and maybe it's just like where I live, and I think this is like a privileged take, but parents rarely, like where I, like around me, I see lots of parents really trying to be good parents. I see lots of, it is rare for me to see a kid with an iPad just like during dinner the whole time.
Yeah.
All the time. Like, I do think that has shifted. Where I think, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years, not 20 years ago. I don't know. When was it when Gen Zs were young? 10 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, it would have been 10 years ago.
About 15, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Like the Gen X's, I guess, were raising Gen Zs. Like, I do think that millennials are trying really hard, and I do think we have like sounded the alarm about things. Obviously, I have a lot of concerns with AI and like AI schools and all of that. But what I've been hearing lately is parents are doing like a, like parents are, you know, watching their kids with technology much more, and it's schools that are more of the problem because they integrated everything to look like we're doing everything and we need to keep up and all of that. And they haven't necessarily had the time to bounce back and like readjust and things like that. So I don't know. That's given me a little bit of hope because sometimes I, you know, I'm very concerned about my daughter and the world that she's going to grow up in. But we can do things. I mean, we like – and there is a part of me that's like, good that social media is bad. Maybe it'll make people be more offline. Like, there was hope. I do feel like people have wanted to be more analog. Like, that is trending. Obviously, I roll my eyes a little bit at, like, the extreme online people who their whole account is, like, glamorizing offline while they're online.
Right. Yeah, no, no, no. I know.
But, you know, there are things – I don't know. I think we can bring back – like, I do think it becomes a point where it's not good anymore and people just, like, don't like it and they start to rebel, which would be great.
Yeah, because then you have to make a better product.
Yeah. So
– I'm also seeing more people on the subway read books.
Oh, that's like nice. Like,
physical books. I see people bring up books.
Well, it's changed my perspective of now, like, if I'm – even like with leaving my phone in North Carolina, like I would have lost my mind last year if that happened, and I would have been really upset. And I was just like, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for me to recapture and re-remember what it was like to not be chained to my phone. So even like if I'm in line somewhere, I'm like, well, this is an opportunity to practice being able to wait in line. This is like an opportunity to – I mean, I don't love like the kids being like friction maxing and all of that stuff because, of course, they had to turn it into like a challenge. But, you know, like where there are opportunities, especially it's like, I don't know, I think all the time about, you know, if we can't wait in line, we're not going to be able to vote. Like we need to keep that skill until things catch up. I mean, hopefully, you know, mail-in voting has been protected temporarily at least, but we do need to be able to have patience. It is important beyond just like a virtue. It's like actually good for your mental health and your quality of life.
I think to tie all of this back into mental health, because that's why we're here, you do need to remember that you have a choice. And I think anytime you're feeling powerless, you have to find a way forward. Like you have to tap back into the reality that like you do have a say. And you do have choices and there are options and nothing is like written in stone. And I, you know, I've had a couple conversations with clients the last little bit about the power of muting accounts.
Yes.
If you don't feel like you want to completely unfollow somebody in the content that they serve you, mute them. Mute their stories.
My hack is break your phone and go on Instagram online because it sucks.
It does. The desktop sucks.
The desktop version is so unsatisfying. You will not stay on long.
They have completely abandoned the desktop updates, let me tell you. I tried that the other day and I was like,
I can't even post to my stories. It's why I haven't been able to post to my stories for like 2 weeks.
No. I like
you pick do the not, harder version and you won't like it as much. Right. That's my tip.
Right. I just think, you know, so many people are I had to do that recently with a couple of accounts that I follow that I didn't love how their stuff was making me feel. And I realized I was comparing myself to them and I felt really down on myself and was getting really hard on myself. And I was like, you know what? It's not these people's fault. I don't have to unfollow them. They're not doing anything like necessarily bad.
Yep.
But I'm going to mute them. For right now, with this stage that I'm in, I need to mute them. And I think the little control that we have over these algorithms and these systems to wield it with impunity, like to just do whatever you need to do to make it survivable. Because I think it's awful, some of this content that we're getting served with. And I've shared like even my experience when I, you know, first was getting into my relationship with my boyfriend now, like it was horrible. I couldn't engage with it at all because the dating content was horrific.
I mean, and think so, about what algorithms are. They literally take your biggest fears and insecurities and then create content geared to that. Like, it is like a nightmare when you think of it like that.
Literally a nightmare. Unless you specifically, like, search animals all the time.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like dog videos. And then even then you end up with, like, this dog got put down.
Yep.
Here's a compilation of day in my life putting my dog down. You know? Like... and then you want to just lay down in the road because you're like, what's the point? All dogs die. And it's like, true. But not like that. And not in this moment, you know, and your dog is two. So like,
got some time, hopefully. But yes, life is, this is the problem. We have never been more in tune with how fragile and precarious
life is.
And it's unfortunate. You know, I think a lot about how I did some of this research and I discarded it to my book, discarded it from my book. But I learned a lot about like the history of the word danger and safety. And it's fascinating just how much like culturally what you're exposed to changes what you think is most likely to happen. Like in the 80s, everyone was terrified their kid was going to be abducted because of milk cartons.
Right.
People don't really worry about that anymore. We're all worried about sleepovers because that's what's trending on TikTok. So I'm not saying I am great at this because I spend a lot of time worrying about my child slipping and dying in my pool. But it is just interesting and important, I think, to check ourselves of it is much harder these days because you've never had so much information and access to things. And AI makes it so much worse because AI always picks the most extreme, statistically unlikely thing that might happen to you or your family member and warns you about it.
Right.
Where people didn't know. Like, people died, you know, and AI does do good. Like I have a friend who had like a serious problem with their appendix and they only really knew because of AI.
Yeah.
So it does good, but it also shows you really extreme stuff.
Yeah. Very hot take is we do need to bring back the sleepover.
I do too.
I think we need to bring back the sleepover. I think if you as a parent want to collect everybody's phones, more power
definitely
to you.
Do that.
More power to you. Collect the phones.
Well, people are more worried about like siblings, I feel like, and fathers. They're worried about sexual assault happening.
I just can't spend my life thinking every home has a sexual perpetrator in it. I cannot do it.
Well, your kid's much more likely to die of drowning. But it is really – it is, I agree. Maybe we'll do an episode of that on Substack because I feel like
destroyed. I could have been – I don't know. Maybe I'm a complete anomaly. I had sleepovers. My first sleepover was when I was 8. I had sleepovers. I still – when people – Amanda and I had a sleepover back in February. When she stayed at my house. Like I
love sleepovers too.
I loved sleepovers. It meant the world to me when I knew on Friday night I was going to my friend's house or my friend was coming over to my house. And it was such an incredible time for us to like connect and bond and laugh. And it wasn't like tied to school or anything like that. And it created, you know, inside jokes and those moments that only the two or three or four of you know. I just like, I don't know. I can understand if you had a bad experience, why you would be hesitant. But I also think we cannot be constantly projecting every single bad experience that we have had onto everybody else. And that doesn't have to minimize your experience and the way you choose to live your life. But to then go out and say everybody now has to do it that way because of this singular thing. Again, I am not minimizing anything that has happened to anybody. What I am saying is we have to have some responsibility with what we are telling people to do and not do. And that if you find out that people allow their kids to have sleepovers, to then say to them, like, your child will be abused and it's your fault.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't think that is a helpful frame.
I agree. Well, we hope you all got something out of this. As usual, come over to Substack if you'd like more bonus content, off-the-cuff conversations. We will probably be weeding into Taylor Swift's wedding over there. Yeah. So join us.
We'd love to see you. As per usual, anything you can do to rate, review, share, subscribe would mean the world. And with that, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.